And that's all built around this supposed 16-year-old South sensation that we'll talk about later.
He loves a bit of Cool J.
Hello, everyone. This there, well, that was LL Cool J, but this phenomenal, apparently phenomenal 16-year-old, but I've got some things to say about that later. Hello, everyone. This is the Final Play Podcast, round 11 of the NRL, starting with Thursday's game. The Eels, well, they built the game up, I thought, well, on Fox Sports at least. They built the game up as, like, I guess the game of the round, but... And it wasn't too bad, but the Eels getting over the Tigers 26-16.
Yeah, I thought. Like you said, yeah, Fox did a they did a big brouhaha about about Parramatta and West, also about Canberra and South on Saturday night too. They're like building up the 7:30 game on Saturday night as well. I didn't mind this game. It's sort of, I thought both sides were super aggressive. I think they sort of did a major build up on Brian Madison and how that the comments that he'd sort of had, it's not so much backflipping, but sort of getting out of his contract at West and basically saying, I'm never going to win a premiership here, so I want out. So he had a bit of a target on his back, and he ended up getting KO'd by Russell Packer.
15 minutes,
who thoroughly enjoyed, sitting him on his ass. overall, I thought this was a good game. Like, fairly even, I guess, but sort of Parramatta ran away with a little bit too much class at the end.
That's right. That's how I sort of took it. It was fairly even, but I just think Parramatta sort of class overcame the Tigers. In speaking of Russell Packer, he did get put on report for. I mean, he's just got dirt in his game for that. I think it was that sort of. Is it, what do they call that tackle where you sort of put the your way back tackle. And like crusher tackle?
Yeah, that didn't look terrific. The optics of that, where he sort of really lifts up and thrusts himself and his body right back down like that. Yeah, that didn't look. That didn't look too pleasing on the eye. He's got a bit of dirt. He's got a bit of mongrel in him. He's fitting back into the team nicely. He made his return a couple of weeks ago, and proceeded to play like 12 minutes and get sin binned. So he's he's come a long way since then. Once again, the Parramatta forward pack, even without Ryan Madison, I thought, stood up fairly well. Like that Regan Campbell-Gillard try where he just blasts through the line and there's no fullback at home like Adam Dewey. I think he was caught out a couple of times in, poor positions. And, that Regan Campbell-Gillard try, that just shouldn't really happen, like just getting busted through the line and then there's no fullback there. Moses chip and chase, I thought, was pretty innovative. Well, not so much innovative. You just don't see that a lot anymore, that the chip and chase and the regather was pretty good. But, all in all, West left themselves too much to do at the end of the game. And like we sort of discussed a little bit earlier before we come on, like just rain. Like every single game it rained except for the game up here in Townsville. But we had rain up here and a lot of it on Wednesday night. So the track would have been a little bit moist, to say the least, on Friday night. But every single game, it rained. So when you get behind and you've got to play a little bit more expansive type game. And when it's raining, it just doesn't come off.
Yeah, but and it just felt like it's like Sydney must be the centre of Australia because everything I heard over the weekend.
Didn't you know that?
Well, must be because everything I heard over the weekend is that these people can't do much because it's raining. And then I looked around and I'm thinking it has not rained here in North Queensland. Yeah. What are you talking about? With Regal Campbell-Gillard, it's his second year at the Eels. I think he's putting himself like he's. he's improved a lot. Well, he's always been that sort of player, but I think he's back in that New South Wales contention.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, he's one of the best props in form in the game at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it just seems like, I mean, he topped the meters, but he did have that, I guess, 60-70 meter bus. But he's just consistently getting better. And that's just probably the Eels in general. The Eels.
Well, and that too. They've got a pretty good 1-2 punch, and him and Junior Paulo as well. So when you're coming off the back of, you know, if they're getting fast play the balls, or you're just getting over the advantage line a lot, then not so much it makes it easier, but yeah, you can definitely get a rumble on, you know, pretty well. And it just once again, you know, that's what Parramatta's game is sort of based on, is getting over that advantage line and giving their halves. You know, Mitchell Moses come back. Yeah, he's been back for two games now.
Dylan Brown's not too bad either.
Dylan Brown is a good young half, and he's flourishing a little bit there as well. So, with the Tigers, I think not so much a danger game or anything for them, but the scoreline a little bit sort of flattered them, you know, at 26-16. You know, there's a late try to Tommy Talau, which sort of got him, made the scoreline a little bit more respectable. But he's been good since coming into first grade too. He's Willie Talau's boy. So, guys who might have been watching footy a long time ago, you know, Willie Talau, former Bulldog. His boy Tommy, and he's been good since he's come to first grade.
Yeah. That's one thing good about the Tigers that I've noticed this year is they've always, I guess, over the years, stay around that 8 or 9. They have a lot of young players.
They've been 9th like the last 2 years in a row. And, they're just they're there or thereabouts. Like, they just can't quite get over the hump.
This year they just seem to bloody more younger players. Like, and they are flourishing, like Harry Grant. You know, Billy Walters, so there's a few that are flourishing, or at least that seems to be flourishing.
Adam Dewey, even though he's sort of, you know, not quite the quintessential fullback at the moment.
23.
But he'll get better. he'll get better the more they stick with him. Like I said before, Tommy Talau. They've got a good crop of young talent there. Even with the old head Benji Marshall still there, you know, Luke Brooks hasn't quite met the heights of, I think, what was touted a few years ago now, when him and Mitchell Moses were sort of running the show there at the Tigers. And Mitchell Moses sort of gone to a different system and is looking better, and Luke Brooks is sort of, I guess, sort of floundering a little bit.
I think they're missing a front row or some sort of experience forward, at least personally, if they wanted to take that next step. But Russell Packer's there, but I just think he's too.
Yeah, that's right. But he's coming towards the end of his career as well. So, they sort of need mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
Decent front row up there, sort of a bit of leadership up front.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Josh Aloa and Alex Twal. Like, Alex Twal's hurt, but Josh Aloa is a good young front rower as well. He punches out plenty of minutes. So, you know.
Yeah, you just need that sort of older head.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Next game was the Upper Townsville, the Cowboys going down to Manly,
24-12. All I seem to do is just shaking my head every time I hear the North Queensland Cowboys. Lately, it's just, I'm starting to get neck cramps. I'm doing it.
Well, they improved. I don't think they improved from
last week. I thought they took a step back. They were really good and a little unlucky against Penrith last week. I don't think they showed any improvement at all.
You think defensively,
they were horrendous. Those tries that Manly ran in were so soft. The Cade Cuss try, the only one that sort of that was a little bit of resistance was the Daly Cherry Evans try, where he's fighting to get over the top of Kyle Feld, and he's the only one there. There was three other Cowboys in the in goal, and all they were doing was looking around.
Yeah, I mean, that has been the story of their year, is that they missed tackles. or the title. Oh,
they can see the most tries in the league. A little stat popped up on Fox League. They've already conceded 52 tries, and they 52 tries. And after that stat was put up, they let in another 3 tries. So that's 55 tries they've let in this year, which is a league worst.
Yeah. Okay, I do see your point there. I mean, on the other side of Manly, it sort of felt like they did what they had to do to win. They didn't seem to, like, it wasn't a great game by Manly. They just did what they had to do.
And for them to only be, you know, for it to be 6-12 at halftime, and essentially, you know, by the end of the game, the scores had doubled. So, you know, that they did what they had to do. They put a game plan together. To come up here and do what they needed to do. I thought North Queensland had an admirable game plan in targeting Tafua with Kyle Feld, but it only bared fruit once. Like, they went to that a lot. You know, it was a very clear game plan that they were going to chip with Clifford and Assey. They were going to chip to that right-hand wing where Kyle Feld is, and they terrorized George Tafua. But it only bared fruit once, and it only got one try out of it.
Yeah.
It was essentially a 12-point turnaround with that Cade Cuss try. If Cohen Hess picks up the ball in the in goal, he bombed an absolute sitter.
Yeah.
And you could see the anguish on his face. And then straight away, at the other end of the field, on that set that Manly has, they score a try. So it's a 12-point turnaround. So, you know, North Queensland score there. You've actually got a game on your hands. It might be 18-12. Instead, it goes the other way, and it essentially shoots the game in the foot.
Just on Michael Morgan, is there talk he's going to be back this year?
Round 13.
Okay, so it's still a couple away. Okay.
And the other thing too, like, there was on a Kyle Feld 20-meter restart as he breaks through the line. And Brandon Elliott stops him, pulls on his leg once, gets up, pulls on his leg again. Like, that is just a 100% sin bin. That's a sin binable offense.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's off a 20-meter restart. It's in broken play. How there was no penalty, nothing.
Well, the penalty, I agree. There should be at least a penalty. They get a bit shaky about it for other things, but they get a bit shaky about when it's that penalty sort of try situation, or at least when they're in the...
It was broken play, but it was blatant. It was two pulls on the leg.
Yeah.
It's 10 in the bin.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it looked like it. I mean, it was pretty evident. It stood out, obviously.
Yeah, it was pretty blatant. But, you know, Cade Custler, I mentioned him before, the try that he scored was soft. But he's been really good since been put in there at 5'8" for Manly alongside DCE.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously the 1-2 punch with Fanua Blake and Tapau up front, Jake Trbojevic. It's for a side like North Queensland, who essentially has got no size on the bench, it's just too much for him to handle. Josh Henne sort of wielded the axe a little bit and dropped Isan Masters. Taolungi had come in, Mitch Dunn had gone to centre, so that they're a little bit in with sixes and sevens with their with a little bit of continuity. But for me, just lack of size on the bench as well is really hurting North Queensland. There's no rest. That you should be getting a fresh guy in, and you know, with Jordan McLean out, and now this week he's back, and Josh Maguire's been suspended. So once again, they're going to be lacking in size up front.
It's just a
revolving door at the moment.
Next game was the other Friday game in Queensland. It was the Broncos up against the Storm. I mean, the Storm did what the Storm seemed to be. Well, I guess everybody's sort of been doing to the Broncos. They won 46-8. It was the first half. They were okay. The Broncos, like, they were. They were very competitive. And then it's for me, just the second half, it's just like Cameron Smith just took over. It was ridiculous what he achieved. Like, he got 4 try assists. He topped the tackle count for Melbourne. He just seemed to be everywhere. That 40-20 where he...
How crazy was the turn on the ball,
and
though?
And then all
of a sudden it's just an off spinner and goes straight to the touchline.
He was everywhere in that game. I mean, I want Harry Grant to be there next year. I just don't know what they're going to do, because I don't think, like, the way he's playing, he probably doesn't need to retire. So unless he moves to, like, 5'8 or halfback, I mean, obviously 9's his, but, man, he's just playing phenomenal. Well, he still looks like he's in his 20s.
Where do you put him? You're set. The only place you're sort of not really set, we don't have a traditional, you don't really have a traditional halfback in Jerome Hughes. But he's playing pretty good in the number seven. You know, you got Cameron Munster there. You're not gonna uproot Pappenhausen. You're fairly set in your halves. So you're gonna upset somebody if they shift Smith to seven and bring Harry Grant back in. Then you know what's Jerome Hughes's role. You know, as you go back to a bench role for 1 year, like someone's gonna be upset.
Or he goes to Tigers, because that's part of his clause in his contract with Melbourne. If Cameron's there at number nine next year, he has the option to go.
You're mortgaging the future then, and that's not smart.
That's exactly what my concern is. As good as Smith is playing, you're right, you're mortgaging the future.
Well, plenty of rumours swirling around that Anthony Seibold's chasing Cameron Smith now, and they want him to come up to the Broncos, and... you know, with all the money that the Gold Coast is splashing around at the moment, who's to say that he couldn't go to the Gold Coast and sort of, you know, have a bit of a swan song with the Titans.
And go to the Bulldogs if he wanted to. I'd say if he goes to anywhere, it's going to be a Brisbane team.
He's not going to be a Cooper Cronk and go to a Sydney team, because that's obviously where he's had other interests in Sydney other than playing football. But that's something. Yeah, Cameron Smith. Yeah, he might want to come home back to Queensland and give it a shot and have a bit of a swan song either with the Broncos or do a Wally Lewis and have a couple of years with the Gold Coast.
The biggest thing I noticed with that game, I mean, it was a big scoreline, but. It's just that when Melbourne had the ball, like, their completion rate wasn't great at 76%. They had just as much errors as Brisbane did, actually more, 11-8. But it sort of seemed that every time they had the ball, they were looking to score, and they did score.
And they did. It was just in that second half, it's just a steady barrage of points. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, they come out second set. Second set of six in the first half try, and it was just death by a thousand cuts. They just put another try on and put another one on, and it just compounded so badly for Brisbane that they just – all the good work that they did in that first half just pretty much all got undone, you know, with that early try to Melbourne in the second half.
And
just got progressively worse from there.
That Tino, God, that's a good Gold Coast are really, you know, they, you know, obviously they've picked up Fifita, which we'll probably talk about later. But
they've got a couple of good forwards coming there. You know, Tino's going there. They've got obviously David Fifita. They've signed Herman Sasa from Newcastle. So they've got a couple of big boppers coming into that forward pack, their roster is moving along, you know, quite nicely for next year.
All three of them played at Gold Coast together when they're juniors, so they all know each other pretty well, which is great.
Tyler Boyd as well, he's sort of part of that little posse that they had playing together down on the Gold Coast. So yeah, there's quite a few of them down there.
Yeah, it's Brisbane, you know, Brisbane, look, they were competitive in the first half, and they just, it's just the class that overtook, I mean, much like the Eels, it's just the class that overtook them in the second half.
You know, Milford had fullback as well, and that sort of got, not so
oh,
much.
He was terrible at tackling. My God.
Just, attacking wise, he just didn't get into the game at all.
But even defense, he was out of position a lot.
Not so much defense, but the first try that Addo scorecard, the ball goes straight through his legs. Clean bowls him.
Yeah, but there was a couple that he led through. He wasn't in position as well. Like
he hasn't played their consistency for how long?
You're right.
So it's just, it's, I mean, he's been made a 5A. He's been made as part of the halves, and then you want him to be that X factor. You just want him to just turn the fullback switch back on. You can't do that.
That's right. I mean, he's possibly not going to be there this week anyway. So it's
I think he might be okay. He's being shifted back to 5'8". Brody Croft's hurt. I think he's done a shoulder, so he's done. Which sort of makes it a little bit easier for them to sort of slide Tom Dearden back into halfback and Milford at 5'8". And I think Darius Boyd will most likely be the choice to go back to fullback. So, once again, another reshuffle. So, that's just what's happening at the Broncos at the moment.
Next game was the first Saturday game. Very competitive with the Warriors. They went down to the Roosters 18-10, but at halftime it was 10-6, and Roosters were shaken.
You could tell they were getting frustrated. Not so much in the first half, but in that second half when they were throwing everything at them and the Warriors wouldn't crack. They were getting frustrated. Jake Friend was all over the referees. He was arguing with the referee a lot. You could just see they were getting a little bit pissed off. It's like, hey, we're the two-time defending premiers here, and you're the Warriors. What the hell do you think you're doing? Can you just let us score, please?
Like, one person pissed off was Jarawea Hargraves.
Oh yeah, him and Etherington got a little heated, and even after full time, I think Etherington sort of wanted to, not so much, he just wanted to be a bit a bit sort of chummy, and Rhea Hargraves, he wasn't having any of it.
Oh, and that's like, he's a young guy, 24, he did want to shake his hand, but Rhea Hargraves it's like he just had a big whinge about it.
Oh yeah, no, he didn't want a bar of it. It was hilarious. Get over yourself, mate. Get over yourself.
Yeah, you're right. It felt like exactly what you just said. Roosters, we're the Roosters, so you can't do this to us.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the thing. It's just it's just the same old story really with the Warriors. Penalties, handling errors. Yeah, there's good and bad places to have handling errors, but to have handling errors when you're in the opposition's red zone and you're not getting to your attacking option, your fifth tackle, to try and challenge the Roosters, you're not going to be in the contest. And for them to be there, and obviously like we said, 10-6 up at halftime, I think they were sort of rattled a little bit, but once the Roosters got in front, Keary took over. And it just, that's, I mean, he just grinded him out of the game.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think Roosters in Keary, that's the first thing that was evident to me is just that he took over that game. I mean, he's still young, technically, Keary. He's 20? He's 28, so I suppose he's got a couple of years on him.
But he's had a few seasons there. He had a few seasons with the Rabbitohs, and now he's had a couple of seasons there at the Roosters. So, but he's now... He was in pretty good form last year. He's just carrying it on this year. I think that the little bit of tutelage under Cooper Cronk last year is really starting to show itself now.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible there's talk that he might even take a pay cut just to stay at the Roosters. Well, not a pay cut. Sorry, he'll get more money from the Roosters, but more potential money he could get.
No, that's right, with another club. But, when you're winning... Yeah, you'll always take a little bit lower than market value.
What's more important? Yeah, exactly right. They're talking he could get about $925,000 a year, which is still good money, obviously. But it's possible he can get 1 point whatever at other clubs. So.
Oh yeah, no, there'll be a few clubs that'll throw the farm at him. So it's totally his choice. So. That's he continues on this form. Yeah, he's one of the form halves that's getting around.
Next game was the Sharks and the Dragons. Again, another team that was in it. The Dragons were in it pretty much the whole way, except for an extremely dubious bunker call. But the Sharks won 28-24.
Just a game of momentum, really. Early on to St. George Illawarra, got out to a hot start, And then the Cronulla just came back and scored 3 tries in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And you just can't turn your back on any team at the moment. But yeah, Cronulla just came back, sort of wrestled that momentum back in their favour. Didn't really let it go until maybe the last 8 to 10 minutes, and sort of St. George Illawarra had come back again. Got themselves back in the game, but they pretty much left themselves again with too much to do.
Yeah.
And just the possession wise, they only had 44% of possession, so to only lose by 4 points is pretty good. But it was quality possession as well, like just not enough inside Cronulla's 20. And you, if you're on the back foot a lot, it's too hard to sort of come back. And Chad Townsend did well in sort of controlling their game, but he's hurt now. So it's a lot of teams now are starting to get a pretty big mounting injury list. Cronulla's sort of one of them. They got a few key injuries. Moylan can't keep that hamstring healthy now. Chad Townsend looks like he's going to be out for a little while.
Fafita's out for them as well.
They're sort of going makeshift. I don't know why they don't want to put, Dugan wants the big money, but they're not putting Dugan at fullback. They're leaving him in the centres. So, whether or not you're stunting your attack by not having Dugan, if he's healthy, he's dangerous at the ball.
Yeah.
So, I don't know why you wouldn't want to put him at fullback. He's been screaming and hollering since he left Canberra that he's a fullback and he wants fullback money, but he's either hurt or he's too inconsistent.
On the other side, Zach Lomax at centre. Ever since he's been picked at centre, he has flourished.
He's
a really good player. Yeah, I mean that. 2 tries alone, but he nearly topped the
grubber and the meters. Grubber and regather, unbelievable. He is in such good form.
I actually thought his position was going to be fullback because that's where obviously they were putting him. But he's only 22, which I felt like he's been around for years. But he's only 20 years old.
He's been in that system for a couple of years too. So, and obviously they've got Matt Dufty there and. Mary McGregor had sort of come out as well and had a bit of a chop at the NRL on how do we keep getting these calls wrong? Obviously we're talking about the bunker getting that call fairly wrong. And listening to NRL 360 last night, they basically said that they don't have the technology to be able to get it in there quick enough with that super slow-mo, because the super slow-mo was pretty obvious that Dufty got it down before. Was it Williams?
Yeah.
Scored the try.
Yeah,
they said scored the try. Yeah. So.
I get it, but it just seemed.
It looks like the bunker in its form now could go by the wayside. But if another technology company can come in and say, hey, we can, this is all off NRL 360. If we can get you those super slow-mos fairly quickly, apparently it takes between 2 to 2.5 minutes to actually get that super slow-mo, footage out there. So that's just too long. So if they can get another technology company who can come in and say, hey, we can get you that, within 30 seconds. Then that'd be terrific. So it could be a good thing for the bunker. It's not going to disband the bunker or anything like that. Like, you need to have it. I still don't mind it. Like, this, how they're getting these calls wrong. I think there's always got to be some form of technology there. So it's just got to be how we can advance the technology and get it quicker.
I was concerned with the Dragons too. It's just the second week it's happened, but with Adam Clune, he's not playing a full game. It's like half time or around half time. Then they shift Ben Hunt, who plays 80 minutes into the halfback, and then take one of the. They've all got four forwards on the bench. So I don't know if that's really good for his progression, Adam Clune, but yeah, it's the second week in a row that's happened to him.
Yeah, and whether or not he's accepted that role, And yeah, and they've gone in, you know, obviously they've gone in with that clear game plan that this is what they're going to do. But like you said, that's probably not terrific for, you know, for his development. But if as long as St. George they're in games, and you know that they'd won for, what have they won, 4 of the last 6?
Yeah.
So as long as they're winning and this formula that they've got now with Hunt at 9, McGuinness at 13, if they're in games, then they're probably going to stick with it.
I mean, he wasn't in there at the start of the year, so he, you know, the other ones all had these 80-minute games already, so it's possible, you're right, he's just fitting into the system. But I don't know, I just don't like a halfback only playing half a game.
It's just, that's a waste of an interception.
But I mean, look, Ben Hunt's playing well at 9. Cameron McGuinness is playing exceptional at lock. So that's more. They got a lot of things they have to work out in the off season with Jack DeBell, and they are going to lose Frizzell. But they have got, yeah, what they're going to do in the off season. Next game is the Knights and the Bulldogs. I just realised.
Canberra South on Saturday.
Yeah, I skipped over one. That's why I had that. What the hell am I looking at? Yeah, Raiders and Rabbitohs, sorry. 18-12. Raiders back on form, I guess, over the Rabbitohs.
Look, they're playing well since, you know, the catastrophic injury to Josh Hodgson, and everyone's basically writing him off.
Exactly.
The only person who's not writing them off is once again Michael Ennis, who is absolutely kidding himself that they think that they're going to make a grand final. But he's not a TV personality, is he?
No, exactly.
You know, Michael Ennis is being extremely biased because he's being paid by the Canberra Raiders. So do you know what I mean? Like, it's just he's got to be professional and put that aside. Yeah. Like, it's just. To me, is there's just no way that they're going to be able to keep this up and play the way that they are and challenge anyone in the finals without the class of Josh Hodgson. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, that's all right. That's what they could play. They could play well. You're right. This season
into the finals, they could sneak into the 8 and do what Manly's doing and winning with a mounting injury toll. But when it comes to crunch time. You're gonna need Josh Hodgson.
As well as they're playing during this season, that's right. The postseason is where they're gonna see how much they're gonna miss Josh Hodgson. That's the biggest thing that I could think. Ryan Sutton off the bench. He only played 58 minutes, but he had a wow of a game.
Absolutely. I think Jack Johns made his debut. Matty Johns' boy.
Yeah.
You know, he got whacked pretty hard a couple of times.
Why do you run a Papali? That's the last person.
I run at him with vigor as well. Like, it's not as if he's, you know, whether he picked him out of the line, he sort of looked up and went, oh, no, here we go. And, I'm sure there was a few squirms up in the Johns' suite. down there in Canberra.
That was supplied by Canberra too, so... Which is nice.
Well, that's they would have had suites galore there. Like,
that's true.
They're not letting that many people into the stadium. So there you go, Matty. You can have one of them.
I just think, I guess with the Rabbitohs, it's like they're not executing that final 20 or 30 minutes. They're there at halftime. They're always there at halftime. It's just that last sort of 20 minutes. It's like, I don't know.
It was a full season of 20 minutes in that last 10 minutes against Newcastle last week.
When they scored those.
They nearly pulled off a comeback. Yeah, but, yeah. Yeah, just it was a bit of a tense sort of last 20. Viliami, the Fijian winger who scored and sort of put Canberra up. I think I don't think it was his debut. I think it was his second game. Charles Nicol-Klokstad was hurt. I think he had he's had a compound fracture of a finger.
Yeah.
So that's not terrific. So he's going to be out for an extended time. So I'm not sure who they want to sort of put there at fullback. You know, whether they want to bring someone in like Oldfield or whether they want to put Rapana there at fullback.
I thought Cottridge. possibly put Kotrits at the back.
I think he would be a better choice at fullback. So. Getting him with the ball in his hands a little bit more would probably be better. But I guess I have to sort of wait and see, I suppose.
In the Rabbitohs, with the music that we said at the start, they got this young, or he's just turned, no, he's 16, so he's turning 17 at the end of the year.
17 on Saturday.
Yep. Joseph Suli, his name. So he firstly had a reported, I think it was $1.7 million on the table from the Rabbitohs, which he accepted as the three-year $1.7 million. And then Rugby Union, apparently, which is now they've come out and said it's all hogwash, have come out and said, no, we'll you know, he's a union, used to play union, we'll take him for 3 years for $3.4 or $3.5 million.
Yeah, it was a massive,
which is ridiculous for a 16-year-old. Now he's, well, they've come out, Rugby is basically, has come out and said, no, we would never offer that much money to him. We don't have that kind of money.
No, so, that's right. Yeah. The rugby union at the moment, they just don't have that kind of cash to be splashing around.
But now, so South then up their deal to 4 years and $2.5 million, which he's accepted. So it's only a slight increase anyway. It was works out about $625,000 a year, which is still huge for a 16-year-old.
That's not bad for, that's not bad on your 17th birthday.
The thing about the whole thing is, well, they firstly had to get Russell Crowe to fly in, apparently, they flew Joseph Suli and his mum to Russell Crowe's farm to sort of woo him to get him to play.
Oh, no, not the South. Infamous farm.
But the whole thing I'm getting about it with this is that it's possible that he'll be probably the first, if it's going to happen, the 17-year-old to play first grade. What do you think about that? A 17-year-old. I mean, it happens in other sports.
It happens in other sports. I don't think it's happened for a little while that a 17-year-old sort of made his debut. I think I seen an interview with Wade Graham, and I can't remember if he said if he was 17 or 18 when he first come into first grade. And it pretty, not so much shot him, but he sort of, just the physical toll that it takes. It's at a young age like that, bashing up against grown men.
Yeah,
I think that's a huge jump, from going to schoolboys football.
Yeah,
straight into first grade. Now, who's to say that he's going to get selected, in first grade straight up next year? Who's to say that he's going to be playing fullback? They could do what I sort of take it as the mold of Tuivasa Sheck. The Tuivasa Sheck was being brought in at the Roosters, Anthony Minicello was the custodian, and they weren't letting him go, so they put Tuivasa Sheck out on the wing and let him develop from there. And then obviously once Mini retired, then Tuivasa Sheck went straight into the number one jersey. That could be the mold that they might try to give him that little bit of first grade experience. You're probably not going to take too many knocks playing on the wing. But in that, in saying that too, he's a big kid, and he might be able to take the knocks. But if some young players out there might get a little bit testy about it and put a target on his back.
Well, that's exactly right.
So, and do you know what I mean? It all works out like that.
They have this rule in place for that reason. They also have the rule in place so they don't end up. Your player managers then go and sign 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds to contracts, right, exactly. to minimise that expectation.
Like what they do in European soccer.
Yeah.
They go out there and sign 12 and 13-year-olds.
They score one brilliant try and then they sign 15-year-olds up. So it's managing their expectation. Clearly South sees something. They're talking like he's the mould of Israel Folau and Greg Inglis. So. Well, Bennett must see something in him to offer that kind of money. They've bet a fair bit of the farm on him for a 16-year-old.
Right. They've chucked plenty at him, and that's obviously going to eat up out of the salary cap. So they've got to watch that, that as well, and that they'll want to be extremely cautious with him as well. Whether or not they're going to promise him a first grade gig from round one next year, or say you'll progressively come through. You know, you might only get 8 to 10 games of first grade next year. You know, and as you know, that's easy money for him. If he's on, you know, if he's getting 650 grand a year, sweet. You know, but as long as he's there for preseason training with the full time squad, you know, the first grade squad, then yeah, then that's how you're gonna have to go about it, even if he plays a lot of the year in reserve grade.
That's how I see it. Is it if he or he's available for selection. You know, he's possibly available for selection.
And then, you know, and injuries happen. So yeah, he might get thrust in there a little earlier than what he's expected. So when you're paying that sort of money.
Plays out.
Yeah.
I guess. I prefer that. And plus, yeah, I just think the target on the back exactly. And he's not fully developed. I mean, no human being is fully developed at 16-year-old ever. Yeah. So
he's going to take some knocks, and they put that rule in place where they're sort of protecting, you know, the youngsters that they can't really come in. But even when you're playing, you know, Q Cup and New South Wales Cup, you're still playing against grown ass men.
Well, that's right.
And you don't think a teen prodigy is going to have a target on his back playing against guys that are fighting to get into first grade. So, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see how it pans out next year.
Now to the actual game that I thought was the Saturday game, the Sunday game. The Knights, I mean, God, this was the most rain-sodden game I've ever seen in ages. The Knights going down to Bulldogs 18-12, but God, yeah, there was so much rain in that game.
Oh, it was crazy. I was listening to this on the radio, and you could, when they were going down for a little bit of sideline commentary to, like on the ABC to former coach Matthew Elliott, and you could hear the raindrops on his umbrella. Like it was crazy. Like you just don't hear that. Like they normally have, you know, they can filter that sort of stuff out, but it must have been absolutely pouring down. It was a tale of two sides. Canterbury come out and played super wet weather football, and Newcastle come. I don't know what the hell they were doing.
No, I really don't. What they were doing. I completely agree. I don't. They just didn't want to. It's like they didn't want to play in the rain in the first half.
It was shell shocked from.
I mean, it was a low, as all these games are like rain games. It was a very low scoring game. But once they got out of the sheds and they felt the rain, they went, oh, I'm not playing in that. I don't know. I agree. It felt very.
It took Newcastle 60 minutes to get into the contest. Like Mitchell Pearce had one of the worst games I've seen him have. Like, he was terrible. His kicking game was terrible. He went missing. Yeah, look, they had some pretty nasty injuries. Like, Sione Mataudi got hurt. He's gone for 6 to 8 weeks with the high ankle sprain. Andrew McCulloch has torn the hamstring off the bone. So he's done. So Connor Watson comes in. Achilles. Connor Watson only plays a handful of minutes. He ruptures his Achilles. So that's him done for 12 months. That's their third string hooker. So now they're going to have to go back to the young kid Chris Randall, who debuted in round 3 this year, and I think it was I don't know if it's a league record or a club record, 72 tackles on debut in 58 minutes. Like that's a high work rate for somebody coming in on debut. So
with all those injuries, you're right. My concern, they didn't bring it up in the game, but it's. Look, you play sports, rain, hail, and shine. That's what they say. But there was a lot. There was a lot of rain. You know, you get your feet stuck in that ground. You know, it can be dangerous for the players. I really don't think
that had a lot of bearing on the injuries that happened. Both teams have got to play on the field. It's not just one team that's out there, you know, in the elements. So, you know, Aiden Tolman stepped up massive. Like he was huge in that game.
Connor Watson just looked like his was just because he got his foot stuck in the ground. And then, but that, you know, you're right. There's two teams that had to play.
It could happen at any time.
Aiden Tolman had a wow game. Luke Thompson is just filling in nicely in that side.
He's fitting in quite well within the Australian type game. You know, coming over from the Super League, he's fitting in very well. Look, I'm not sure if they gave Lachie Lewis the hook at the end of the game, but once they took him off, they sort of lost their way a little bit, yeah. I think. And pretty much like the very first thing that happened after Lewis was taken off is the young kid Wakeham kicked out on the full, and that pretty much started Newcastle's resurgence. And they had no right to be anywhere near that game at all, but you know, sort of come through with a bit of a, you know, a bit of a thriller at the end. You know, only going down by six, but that they had no right to be anywhere near close to that game. Like the Canterbury just pumped them into the ground, and it like you said, it just looked like Newcastle didn't want to be out there in the rain.
That was the concerning thing. Like you're right. Like, I mean, once Lachie Lewis left the field, it sort of did let the Knights back into the game a little. But why have a halfback on the bench? Like if you know, it was a weird, you know, I haven't seen him play any other position. It was a weird sort of interchange to sort of pick.
It's a strange interchange.
It is a strange interchange.
Whether we got the hook or whether they're just like, oh no, we have to get, you know, we've got to get our bench players involved.
Well, that's how it seemed to me when he came on.
It's just like, what? Why? I don't understand why. Then don't name him. Like, well, you know, Kieran Foran is going to be your number six. So it just you've got to. They're not playing reserve grade. They're not playing New South Wales Cup. So they've got to get game time somehow. Yeah, it's a tough call to make.
Well, the only way I could sort of see it, why they were doing it, is exactly what you just said. Then they had to put someone on. Plus, they probably felt like, and it sort of looked like that they were in the game and they just needed, like, Lachie Lewis isn't the greatest defender. So maybe they felt like they needed someone to be out there as a decent defender.
Just to shore up and just make sure that they were going to be fairly solid in defence, just to make sure that they actually got the win.
Yeah, their completion rate was phenomenal. 41 out of 45 at 91%. Yeah,
crazy.
They were brilliant. Crazy. So, yeah, great. I mean, Bulldogs, they are getting a new coach next year, but they seem to cohesively play together, which is great.
Yeah, no, that's right. All credit to them. Yeah, they come out there with the right game plan, the right attitude, and it was just one of those, you know, mystifying games by Newcastle that they've had this year. You know, the couple of losses that they've had. This is probably the worst loss that they've had. Like the loss that they had coming up here against the Cowboys was pretty ordinary, but this is probably the worst loss they've had for the year. When they lost to Melbourne earlier, and they've got Melbourne again this week, when they lost to Melbourne earlier, it was a test for them, and they failed miserably. But this is a bit of a wake-up call for them. Yeah. Like, I think this has sort of dropped them out of the top four as well. So, I think this is a wake-up call for Newcastle, I think.
Speaking of, I guess, the last game, the Titans had a game plan going in and started brilliantly. They went down, unfortunately, to the Panthers, 22-14, but man, they were in it for the whole game. It felt like
they didn't score anything in the second half. 16-14 at half time, like they pretty much stole two tries in the last 5 minutes. I listened to most of this game on the radio as well, and so good to hear Andy Raymond commentating again, former Fox Sports. He's on the ABC now. He's so good. I don't know how they let him go. Like he's the kind of commentator that makes you a little bit excited listening to it on the radio.
Yeah,
like he's
exactly.
So animated. He's great.
Yeah.
And they also had Clint Schafowski as sort of their second man in the booth for the ABC. And I've never heard him on commentary before. He's terrific.
He speaks really, he's
not your typical sort of meathead footballer. You know, he speaks well. Yeah. He was great, but you know, to the game, the couple of tries that they pretty much stole, all of their tries were pretty much against the run of play. The
exactly.
Fogarty try, you know, what did he run? 98, 97 meters.
Yeah.
Anthony Dons
was basically a steal try.
Exactly.
So they all were. Just,
But Penrith fell asleep a little bit and they took advantage.
The concerning thing for me with the, and this is, I mean, we'll talk about Fifita in a second, and a few other players that are coming in, is that their forwards just aren't stepping up in the Titans. Not one player on that forward pack made over 100 metres. Not one. All the backs did all of it. If Fogarty, yeah, got 193, but Corey Thompson, Anthony Don, Philip Sami, they all made over 100 metres. No, yeah, not one.
I think this is one of those games a lot of people are talking up. Mo Fotowaker, who's the young prop there, there probably wasn't one of his best games.
No, he wasn't being pretty consistent. He didn't have a great game.
He was pretty ordinary. They've got a lot of fringe first graders there. You know, Jolliffe, Keegan Hipgrave, those type of guys. They're not real big meter eaters. Kevin Proctor, he's not one of those guys who's a big meter eater. Jai Arrow and his ridiculous haircut. is not really that. That thumper that you need up front, to make those hard yards. They've got troops coming.
They're buying smart, aren't they? Buying smart. I mean, look, then Tino and all that. I mean, what do you think? And I still think it's smart. For Fifita's contract, 3 years, $3.5 million. I know he's 20. I know he hasn't played a lot of games, but I don't mind. I think they had to do it, and they were always going to pay overs a little bit. But I personally think he'll flourish in that 3 years and $3.5 million. I think he'll justify.
Well, I guess we'll only know if they're paying overs when he steps on the field and pulls on a Gold Coast jersey. If he comes out and just has a barnstorming season, did they pay overs? Or not it translates to wins on the field and them getting close to playing finals football and stuff like that. I think, first things first, let's get off the bottom of the ladder.
Exactly.
But, if he comes out and has a couple of huge years, did they pay overs?
Well, it's possible. But I guess what I'm saying, I think they had to spend that money to get him, and he'll attract – I mean, he's already attracted friends already, but he'll hopefully attract other players – if they get off the bottom of the ladder.
That's right.
Exactly right. That's the whole key of this. So
that's the part of it. Look, they've been in the news a little bit too, the Gold Coast, with a few sort of, not so much player transactions, but it looks like the Ryan James, who's pretty much spent the best part of the last 2 years out with major knee issues, is going to Canberra pending a medical. So he's out the door. Bryce Cartwright has bailed back to Sydney. I think he might have, that's an extremely failed experiment, paying him, $700,000 a year. Shannon Boyd, who was sort of a big recruit, I guess, for them, looks like he could be out on a medical retirement. So they're going to have
some money to play with.
Yeah, they're going to have a lot of cash to throw around. And if they can maybe do something, and get somebody a little bit more solid, maybe beside Ash Taylor, or get somebody to sort of take him off their hands. I don't know. That's the elephant in the room, is what happens with Ash Taylor.
See, even, talking about failed experiments, I still think they need a number nine. I think Nathan Peets had a half decent season at Eels when they signed him, but I don't think
they had him and Mitch Rain, who are two, fairly experienced dummy halves, and they just haven't quite worked up there.
I mean it's the start of what they needed. I think they need a nine, and you're right, possibly someone to play alongside Ash Taylor until that contract comes up. So that's next
and they've got the young kid AJ Brimson up there as well, who hopefully is coming back in the next couple of weeks.
So he's an
exciting sort of young prospect who they can play at fullback, maybe slot into the halves as well. So they've got to be careful with him as well, because he's only a young kid. I think he might have been part of the David Fifita Super Friends group. So I think
that's actually a good way to put it.
That's what they're building.
But
there.
It just shows you he's attracting players already. He's probably talked to these guys and said, "Oh, we're not the day."
And sort of listening to the radio a little bit as well over the weekend. Gordon Tallis, looks like he's had a little bit of, and Mal Meninga obviously as well, but Gordon Tallis has had a little bit behind the scenes to do with him as well. Like he's texted his family, he's texting him. He was asked by David Fifita, you know, are you going to be on the coaching staff there at the Gold Coast next year? And Gordon Tallis basically said, look, if you want me to be, I will be. So that's a that was out of Gordon Tallis's mouth. I heard it on the radio.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was. And he said it on Fox Sports as well. But what it's funny, like, you can see how much now he really detests the Broncos. He's come out and said it so much. But, you know, to pull someone away from Brisbane that everybody in Brisbane wanted.
Well, you know, and there's a lot of hearsay around swirling around that Fifita just simply didn't want to play under Seabold as well. So he doesn't feel like he's going to develop in a way that he thinks that he could possibly under Justin Holbrook.
Yeah, well, that's right. I think I like Justin. I think Justin Holbrook's stepping in the right direction. Obviously, wins make a difference, but I think...
No, this was always going to be, I think, a sort of, you know, baptism of fire for Justin Holbrook. However many wins they can sort of scrape together this year, it's about development and it's about putting the team in the right direction and putting them on the right path to success. And that, you know, that'll come with you know, whether it's young talent that they sort of bring through. You know, Palm Beach Currumbin is a massive rugby league school.
Well, that's where all the Fifita and all that played.
That's right. So, they produced an absolute bucket load of first graders, and a lot of talent goes down there. So, you know, it's not as if they'll be starving, you know, for recruits. It's about trying to pry them away from Big Brother up the road.
That's exactly right. That'll do it, but there's some breaking news coming through purely because of what's going on with COVID in New South Wales. Three Queensland teams in Melbourne that are all in Queensland, they have been given the green light that they can go between games in Sydney. So they've still got that exemption to fly in and out of Queensland, which is good.
Which is fair enough. Like, I think that's that's something to do with the NRL themselves and the Queensland government. So obviously they're not posing a big threat, and it'll be basically what New South Wales teams are doing up here: fly in the day of, and most likely fly home that night, which is not terrific on the players, and that'll take its toll, I think, eventually.
Yeah.
But if this is what you've got to do, and you know, there's rising cases of coronavirus in New South Wales, not exploding like it is in Victoria.
That's what Blaney said as well.
They're just trying to knock it on the head, which is the smart thing to do. And just while we're on there, I'm sick of three words. I'm sick of coronavirus. I'm sick of COVID-19. And I'm sick of the word bubble.
Bubble. Yeah.
I'm sick of.
Yeah.
Good God.
So to finish up, I mean, we've probably got to do our studs and duds of the week, but we're looking at doing, I guess, at this sort of point, probably the buy and flop of the year.
Yeah, well, we're halfway through the season, so we just sort of assessed who, you know, who new recruits are for each team, and there's plenty of good buys that are running around this year for different clubs.
I mean, mine it sort of stood out pretty evidently for me once we started talking about it.
Look, you know, you've heard both of us talk about it. I think it's absolutely 100% Appy Coruscant. Yeah,
exactly.
But you know, with guys like Adam Dewey who have gone to gone to the Tigers, Harry Grant, Ryan Madison.
Yeah, yeah, he's another fringe New South Wales player that'll probably be in the New South Wales squad because he's having there was I don't get me wrong, there was definitely names in there that could have been. I just think Appy has taken that Panthers side to the first position.
I know
Cleary's there, but I think he's really just made that forward pack hum.
Hope that some of these teams, whether it's like Penrith or Parramatta, they haven't peaked too early. You just hope they haven't peaked too early. That there's going to be no buys. You know, it's going to be a grind once it comes down to the end of the season, and it's basically going to come down to who has the least amount of injuries. Which is always a story for most years, but I think this year, because there's no buys, there's no real time. You can't blood people to come back through, you know, Q Cup, New South Wales Cup, you've just got to get right back into first grade. Running around at training.
I just think, out of those two sides you mentioned, I think Penrith have a better opportunity. I think if any team's possibly peaking and they look like they're a bit shaky, it'd be Parramatta out of those two. But
yeah, and that's the thing too, you know, Penrith are basically doing with not so much a makeshift 5'8", but, you know, a lesser known 5'8", and realistically, a no-name fullback.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you know, Dylan Edwards has been terrific for them at the back there, but, you know, he's solid. He gets the job done. But, you know, the gas on the fire is Appy Coruscant out of dummy half.
Huge.
And obviously Nathan Cleary as well. You know, he's an incumbent State of Origin player. So, you know, he's playing out of his skin at the moment. Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. But Appy's complimented him. That's why, I think easily. We've mentioned it so many times. I just think that's one Manly will rue to get that they've lost.
Oh, yeah. Huge. Oh, yeah. But Penrith's forward pack as well. Is that Zayo?
James Tarmo having...
Jimmy Tarmo is just... that's one for me that I rue. I'm so disappointed North Queensland let him go.
He didn't have the greatest... Yeah, exactly. I just with Tarmo, he didn't have the greatest last couple of seasons, but, you know, he's always been consistent, but this year he's another one that's possibly could be in the New South Wales squad because he is playing. It's like he's younger again.
So many cops to pick from.
He's 31, but he looks like he's playing in his 20s again. He's got a lot fitter. I've noticed sort of the pictures that have come out. He's extremely fit, which is ridiculous.
He's a big unit.
Yeah, but I mean, like he's got there's hardly any body fat on the guy. It's ridiculous.
Oh no, God no. No, I remember seeing it at one of the pubs up here just one afternoon on a Friday afternoon, and he just had women draped all over him. He was in a LA Clippers Blake Griffin jersey, and holy mackerel, just man, it's like muscles in places that you didn't think you could have muscles, but holy mackerel.
So moving on, I guess, to then the flop of the year so far. We'll say so far because technically the year's not out.
Well, the year's finished, but yeah, I'm just sort of gone, you know, homegrown and being up here with the Cowboys. I think it's Isan Masters.
Yeah.
He got dropped last week.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and he was.
Right. He was a big boy. You know, a lot was expected of him. He just hasn't lived up to expectations so far, and they're finding other options at centre, which, you know, for me, Justin O'Neill isn't the option at centre either. But
what's scary is Justin O'Neill possibly, depending on injuries, possibly could be in the centres for the Maroons because of the thinness in the centres. I know,
please don't.
It's not homegrown, but I've gone Queensland. I just think the flop of the year for me is Brody Croft. He came in exactly the same thing with huge expectations.
Well, there was secret meetings with him and Seabold in Queensland. Yeah, having coffees at undisclosed cafes and things like that. It was one of the worst kept secrets going around. But yeah, boy, he hasn't. And now he's hurt.
The thing with it is that. And this is going to Melbourne. Melbourne don't get rid of or drop players, and Harry Grant's a perfect example why they've got him on loan. They don't drop players if they think they're going to flourish in Melbourne. They clearly didn't think Brody Croft was going to flourish in Melbourne, so they let Brisbane get him.
I'd say maybe someone like Scott Drinkwater. Like I don't think he hasn't quite lived up to expectations up here at the Cowboys, but. He hasn't been terrible.
No, you're right. But I guess, I mean, you know, I guess I keep saying there's just huge things. And that he was supposed to be, not savior, but that was the Anthony Seabold's first buy of his master plan.
Right.
And it's done
nothing.
And
to put him alongside Milford, you know, you got your controlled kicking game. Yeah, Anthony Milford's going to be more of a runner. And it just hasn't happened. Like, you know, the whole Broncos Eaters has just been... It's just been a disaster. You just need to nuke it all together and just start from scratch.
I mean, the good thing is his contract isn't hugely expensive, because they got no money anyway. But it's probably a little bit unfair on him when I sort of thought about it because, you know, he's coming in with high expectations, and he's not the only one playing terrible on that side. So, no.
And look, they're another side who's got a massive injury toll as well, but it's just, a lot of people sort of focus on the fact that, yes, they're the Brisbane Broncos, they're a glamour club, and they're just getting lapped week after week after week.
Yeah, they are, and that's just not what you see from Broncos. That's the thing. So, last thing we'll finish is the studs and duds of the week. Go ahead, start with stud if you wanted to.
Look, stud is not for me this week. It's not an actual, not an actual player. It's just the teams that are sitting on the bottom of the ladder this week. The effort that they showed, Canterbury. The Warriors, the Gold Coast, Brisbane in that first half.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it was a disaster in the second half, but they showed intent. They looked semi competent football teams. You know, the Warriors were terrific defensively. Canterbury took in the right game plan as a wet weather game. You know, the Gold Coast showed flashes of brilliance. Brisbane were holding out Melbourne for most of that first half. It's just the effort and intent by those teams that are lower, on the ladder this week, I thought was encouraging for the competition. And hopefully that they can sort of continue that and we don't see so many blowouts. There's some competitive games around and that's only going to help.
Well, and I'll go on the back. It was Bulldogs for my, like, the entire side for the start of the week because they just think they're improving so much better. Unfortunately, it could be good for him or not, but unfortunately Dean Pay is going to be moved out. But if he keeps winning these games or at least being competitive in these games, it's going to be good for him to sort of, if he's going to look elsewhere. But they just as a whole, the Bulldogs, they weren't going into that game. They were definitely not going in that game favourites. So
no, absolutely not. I'm pretty sure they were like $4.50 or $5 outsiders. Yeah.
They played, and it was as a team effort. Not one player stood out.
That's right, exactly.
Except for Tolman, possibly. 1-17. Yeah.
Tolman, yeah, but 1-17. Like, those sorts of games, they're on the backs of the forwards, but, everybody's got to play their role. Yeah, Nick Meaney was great in that game as well.
Yeah.
He's a makeshift fullback, He was sort of a bit of a fringe winger there, and they've thrown him in at fullback since Will Hopewadi's gone down, and he's played really well at fullback.
My dad was unfortunately it was the bunker that they really personally stuffed up on that Sharks. It was pretty evident. Like, it's funny how everybody else can see it, but then they can't.
It's the technology as well. It's Fox Sports have got the technology, but it takes them 2 to 2.5 minutes to actually get that vision, whereas the bunker doesn't have that. So,
well, but then the commentators also said, well, and obviously this isn't the case, but why can't they challenge them? Why can't they challenge the bunker? Challenge the refs.
That's right. Yeah, why but can't they challenge the bunker? Challenge the bunker to? It's got to go back to the bunker.
Well, I get that, but then it probably goes to a ref's decision. I get that, and I thought it goes to the ref.
The ref said it was a try.
Well, exactly. The ref probably looked at the screen for the next 6 to 7 minutes that he watched all the replays and go, yeah, it was a clear mistake, and you should be able to challenge something like in the NFL, as an example.
Who do you challenge it to? They've already gone up to the bunker to say, yeah, we need to check this out. And then there's a captain's challenge. Where, oh, no, we want to challenge it. Oh,
and then it goes back to the referee's decision.
What happened? Yeah, what happens? Then the referee goes, oh, we're going to send it back to the bunker?
No, he'll just decide like a referee. Now, remember the old referee's decision one? I used to love seeing that one. You never see that anymore.
Back to ref's decision, exactly. None of this BS of like they have to make a decision right there and then, call it a try or not. Why can't they just give an indifferential decision? Look, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what I've seen. I want to send it up. I don't want to send it up as a try. I don't want to send it up as a no try. You guys do it. It just puts unnecessary pressure on the referee to make a call.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. I used to love seeing that ref decision. And they go back. Cool. And nine times in a turn, they blow the try. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that'll do it this week for the round 11 of the NRL podcast. Follow us always on Twitter at Final Play Pod and Facebook's Final Play Podcast as well. If you can get your podcasts 90% of everywhere, our except podcast 90% of everywhere. that'll do it this week. Have a good week, everyone.
Oh, the NBA's coming back. Ooh. The NBA's coming back. So yeah, have a listen out and have a look out for our NBA restart pod as well. So yeah, can't wait for that as well.
Have a good week, everyone. My name's Jason. Miles doesn't like the word Bubble Smith. And I'm going to say it every time. I'm going to say it every time when we talk about NBA. You know that bubble that they're in?
Oh, my God. I just cannot stand the word bubble. Miles, I cannot stand the word bubble plum.
See ya.
Yep.